Hey, listeners, welcome to our latest book club episode. You voted, and you voted for one of the greatest books of all time, Jane Eyre. In this episode, we talk about who we love to love, who we love to hate, why does Jane love Rochester, and what is the main theme so beautifully woven through the whole book. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Book Fair. We help thoughtful women find wholesome, life-affirming books for themselves and their families.
Are you tired of picking up the latest new release and finding it full of junk you don't want in your life? You are in the right place.
This show shares curated content, and we do it together within a fun, book-loving community. So pull up a chair at the table and join the feast.
Welcome, Book Fair friends. We are so excited that you are here with us today. It is the long-awaited, much-anticipated Jane Eyre book club episode. We have been reading Jane Eyre over the summer and looking forward to this for so long. Y'all have sent in some really good questions, and there is just so much to talk about this book. So before we get into that exciting discussion, I would like to share a review with you that one of our listeners left, and we are going to start sharing some reviews on the show to celebrate and thank our listeners who leave us reviews, because reviews are really important to us. Amanda, why are reviews important?
Well, first of all, I love compliments. So I would love to read tons of comments saying how wonderful you think. But also,
and now Amanda is completely losing it.
We haven't even started this massive undertaking yet of Jane Eyre. But the most important reason to leave us 5-star reviews in iTunes is because it is the most important thing you can do to help other people find us.
Yes, that is like a huge thing in the podcasting world, that when people are looking for new podcasts to listen to, they look at the reviews. So we are going to be asking you, if you have not done it, to leave us a review in iTunes. If you don't have an Apple device, grab someone who does and just leave a quick review. It will be so, so helpful. So I'm going to read you a wonderful example of a beautiful review that just makes my heart glow. To start, I'm not a podcast person at all. This was recommended to me, and I'm so glad I took the suggestion. These ladies are unbelievably fun and encouraging. I'm loving the different perspectives each of them bring to the table, as well as how open they are to feedback and suggestions. They are truly interested in the discussion. They're not here to, quote, school anyone. They're here to spark a fire for readers of all kinds, to fan that flame in all seasons of life, and equip their listeners to continue to find joy and growth from the wonder gift of books. This podcast is becoming a highlight of my week.
Aww. That was so kind.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. That is exactly what we're wanting to do here. I'm so glad that comes across.
I feel like she could have like read our minds of like what we're trying to do, yeah, and then like put it in there. So that's like super encouraging too.
Yeah. So then when some stranger says, what's this book fair thing? Oh, well, I want that. Hopefully. Thank you. Okay, guys, Jane Eyre. I have to tell you, I'm so excited, but also this feels a little daunting to me. This book is a lot. And yeah, I read it and have had just quiet over it for about 3 weeks where I couldn't even really talk about it out loud. I've been thinking about it. Have y'all felt like that?
I wasn't finished soon enough to feel that way this time.
Oh, okay, I got that.
But I do get that. And just yesterday, I watched another YouTube video that just blew my brain about another layer of her craft here. And now I have to read the whole book again, asking of it about this new concept. So I have notes on that. We'll talk about it. But it just, there's so many layers.
What number reading was this for everybody?
So this was 3 for me. I read it in high school, loved it, like deep, deep loved it. And it had always been on my list of favorite books. I loved it so much. And then I pulled it out and read it again. No, this was actually four, remembering, because we did it in book club. So we did it in book club. And I revisited it another time. And this was my fourth. And it's funny, when the first time I reread it, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road from when I first did, I almost felt like I didn't like it as much. Like it didn't live up to the memory of like, this is the best book ever.
Yeah.
And I think coming to it as an adult, I just was like, oh, I'm not sure why I thought this was like in my top three of all time. And I think in some ways that was probably just let down of memory.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like the experience I had the first time of devouring this amazing book and it being one of the first really great books I had ever read and just being so deeply in it and loving it so much. But then as I've continued to read it, now it's like back up there in top five because it is just so rich and so beautiful. And now I completely understand why I loved it so much when I was a teenager.
Amanda, what about you? What number reading?
This was three or four for me, and I did not read it until, see, I was counting on Goodreads to tell me the year, because you know it'll say how many times you've read it, but now my review just says this year, the time of this reading, but okay. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. So it's just been recent and probably just in my 40s, maybe late 30s that I've read it. And I can't believe I went this long without reading it, but I did. But it is one of my favorites.
So this was second for me. And I think I said in one of our past episodes that I went a long time without ever rereading books because I would just think, well, there's so much more out there I want to read. And one of my goals this year was to reread a classic. Well, I might be on my third now to reread. So I ended up thinking there's something there. But I read Jane Eyre in high school to take an AR test. Everybody remembers AR? Is that still around? I don't know if it is or not.
No.
You know, to make a 100 on an AR test, you actually don't even really have to know the meaning of a book. You just have to know the events that happen. And that's two different things. And so I read the book. I liked it. I scrambled the night before, reading late into the night to finish it. And I made a good grade on the test. And I don't know how much I really knew what the book was about. And so reading it again this time, I really enjoyed seeing different things, which you're always going to do with a second reading. But I loved so much just going, oh, wow. Or the awful things actually seemed a lot more awful to me this time as an adult, viewing a child or viewing a new person into the world. So I wanted to talk about layered reading first. I thought that you girls were both ahead of me on times reading. What themes stand out to you in this book? Let's start with like a real basic overlay.
I have a little list of some different themes that I think are addressed, but I think the main theme is I have the physical copy, the edition done by Karen Swallow Pryor, and she was a guest on Close Reads podcast when they read this. So I'm using a lot of her language. But I think the main theme has to do with Jane becoming a whole person. Mm-hmm. And the way they say that on the podcast, and Karen says it a lot in her introduction to the book, is the creation of the self.
I get that. I agree with that a lot. Just my adult mind heard it this time, this book, of when a child is so unloved and pushed aside and mistreated. Finding your place in the world is a job no matter what your childhood looked like. But when your childhood looked like that, and you have not had some basic things built into your character and to your knowledge of who you were, that is a real job. And it is a real journey to seek out. Who am I? Where is my voice? What is allowed? What do I believe about this and that? I mean, and so that, I think that's a lovely way to say it.
Perhaps it is a journey worthy of one of the best novels ever written.
Maybe so. Trisha, what about you? Overarching theme that stands out to you?
I agree with Amanda that it is about Jane's psychological journey and the creation of herself, of her soul. And I love this quote from Karen Swallow Pryor. She says, "The reason so many novels from the 18th and 19th centuries feature an orphan is that such a figure serves as a metaphor for what we all are in modernity. Autonomous individuals with a will, burdened with the task of forging an identity." Mm. So, you know, before modernity, when society as a whole accepted these broader contexts of religion and culture and the state and the classes and all of that, you were born into a place in the world and people largely accepted that.
Yeah.
And with the rise of modernity and the rejection of those traditional places to understand who you are, we are essentially all being sent on this individual journey to find ourselves and meaning and purpose.
Well, and agency in a way too.
Right. And so, and that journey, I think, just keeps getting harder and harder. Like for Jane, she was an orphan. And like you said, Elizabeth, she had these things that were huge obstacles she had to overcome. Like we can see the things she didn't have in that grounding and nurturing of a family and parents to help her understand herself and her world and just love and just, mm-hmm. you know, all the things that she didn't have in this book. But she did still have, for example, religion. And when at the school, especially once it improves and she's really just under the tutelage of Miss Temple, she does have scripture and what she believes God wants her to do as a grounding force in her life. And I think when we look around in our society today and we see, you know, how much of that we've lost.
Yeah.
I think this story is just as powerful or more powerful than it ever has been in being the story of someone who has a lot to overcome to sort of find themselves.
I heard Madeline Kearns describe this as a spiritual biography. And I'd never heard those exact words before. And that really was mind blowing to me. And I got to read, I heard that before I started reading it this time. So I was excited to read it through that lens.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I love the way that she writes about Jane suddenly starting to care about spirituality. Like it had been told to her, but it wasn't her own. And she, the way she writes her slowly taking that in and considering it and starting to say, was really important to, like, this is where the journey began. Or the journey actually began when I didn't recognize this as something that was going to matter in my life. Yeah, that's a great way to say it. I had not heard that.
I think it's really interesting and important to understand about this book that it is both gothic and realistic. And, you know, this book obviously is so famous and the whole Mad Woman in the Attic, you know, reveal is...
Spoiler.
Yeah. I don't know. What is it? Famous literary plot points of all time.
Yeah, like, almost you know, you now.
Yeah, you think you're getting married, but oh, there's a crazy wife in the attic, you know, and that comes from the gothic side. So you can describe or define gothicism in literature as a fascination for the irregular, grotesque, dark, sensational, or mysterious.
Yeah.
So the plot of Jane Eyre and then the way she describes things and some things about the tone are gothic. Right? This thing about the mad woman upstairs or, you know, the way the children are dying at the orphanage. You know, these are very dramatic, kind
of
grotesque.
Even the way she talks about the weather each time. She mentions the weather regularly and it's, I mean, maybe it's just their weather, but it's a lot of dreary weather.
Yes, a lot.
I could not live there.
All the foreboding, all the hints at otherworldly or spiritual influences, like the red
right up to the end when the voice calls her, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, is this a ghost story?
Yeah.
But there have been, you get that question in and out throughout the book. Like, is there a ghost in the attic?
Yeah.
What's going on in the red room at the very beginning? That was terrifying, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes,
but you've got that gothicism, the mystery, a little bit of even scary, horror-y kind of things, juxtaposed with a very realistic psychological journey. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was groundbreaking, I love this quote I love this quote. Jane is considered one of literature's first modern women in refusing to fit into either of the age-old dichotomies, angel or whore. She is realistic in being simply human. No wonder that in his essay, Charlotte Bronte, G.K. Chesterton called Jane Eyre the truest book that was ever written.
The shout out to my boy.
So when we read Agnes Grey in episode 22, I'd invite you to take a peek back at that if you are new with us. We discussed the Bronte sisters a little bit, the fact that there were several writers in the family, and the idea of them publishing each of them under a different name, under a man's name. And so this book was published in 1847 under Currer Bell. And I read some different things about this time than I had last time. And at least that I don't remember us talking about. We talked about the idea that women couldn't publish books, or women's books were just kind of considered fluff and not ever taken seriously. So I really thought of it in the past as just a way to get your book out there because you're a woman. But I also read several things this time when I was reading, doing some research for this book, that she particularly wanted her books to be taken seriously and graded with a more real academic, what am I saying here because I'm saying something tone. And I thought that was really interesting.
Women could publish with their own name. Austen had already done it. Yeah. Anne Radcliffe, forerunner in the goth. She was the Stephen King of the gothic novel that came before her.
She felt like a lot of the literary criticism of the day, if it was written by a woman, it was criticized very differently than if it had been written by a man.
Yeah.
Like, so that it was almost like, this is a girl's book. Yeah. So she wanted it to be criticized and read just on its own merit, mm-hmm. and not through the eyes of, well, you know, a woman wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so good job, you. Yeah.
She also really wanted to keep her anonymity. And I thought that was really interesting. So I am almost done. I just have a couple chapters left of the biography of her, written by Elizabeth Gaskell, who I also love. Shout out to, you know, North and South and Wives and Daughters, two of my other favorites. And about 5 years after she published Jane Eyre, she and Gaskell became friends. And so after she died, you know, so young, of course, a few years later, Gaskell decided to do a lot of research. Like, this was not just, let me tell you about my friend. Like, she did a ton of research and gathered all the letters she could of Charlotte's, wow. from all of her acquaintances, all of her friends, all of her family that was still living. I would say at least half, if not more, of this book is Charlotte's own letters. So you are really getting her life as told by her. And then Gaskell just kind of fills in the blanks, and she fills in a lot of history. Hmm. I will say, as a side note on this book, that the first time I started it, I abandoned it because it's very long. And Gaskell goes into history, like Haworth, which is the city, the little town the Brontes lived in. She takes like 50 pages at the beginning to give the history of Haworth.
You didn't need all that.
And the first time I read it, I was like, this is the most boring biography I've ever, I'm 30 pages in, and we're still 200 years away from the Brontes and Howard. I don't think I can take this. Yeah. Well, so I had to just kind of, so there were parts that I just kind of skimmed or skipped, because it doesn't mean that much to me for someone who lived in Britain, or who maybe knows more about Britain at that time. It might mean more. And I'm sure there's great historical detail in it. But it didn't mean a lot to me. So I did skip some little sections. But once you get to her life, and especially since there are parts of Jane Eyre, like the school she went to, that had huge influences come from specific incidences in her own life, it is fascinating to read about.
So lesson here is, get you a friend that loves you as much as Gaskell loved Bronte.
Right. That will tell your story to the world.
And what's the title of this biography?
The Life of Charlotte Bronte by Elizabeth Gaskell.
She's like, I'm going to tell it exactly like it is. I'm not even going to jazz up the title. This is what it is.
But they really valued their privacy. And she really tried to keep it a secret. For a long time, her publishers didn't know her real name.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah, for a long time. Like, she corresponded as if she was Currer Bell.
Man, like, well done.
Yeah.
And that's hard really for us to think about in this day and age. We can't keep a secret of an identity like that. It's just a few Google searches to bust that wide open. But if you only have letters and a address, you know, no one's traveling over across to verify anything. Who cares? We got a great story. Wow, yeah. That's cool. All right. Who is your favorite character in the book besides Jane? Wait, let's do it. Let's do it in two categories. Who did you love to love and who did you love to hate?
Well, loving to hate is got to be a toss up between Mrs. Reed and Mr. Brocklehurst.
Correct.
That is the correct answer.
Although St. John was really up there for me.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like St. John is in a little bit different category because he at least, and you feel like he at least did have a good motive.
Yes.
Very mistakenly applied.
Except he said, I was there with you of like, okay, you're misguided, until he said, you are not made for loving. And I was like, well, you're trash. Yeah. I don't care what time period it is that we're in. You do not say that to another human being. Like, you don't. Yeah. Especially if you are a carrier of God's message. That's the opposite. So
I had more sympathy for him on this reading than I have in the past. But that was really bad.
Yeah.
That was really bad.
Really bad. But yeah, when you see, I mean, there's nothing more maddening to me than the mistreatment, neglect, yay, abuse of children. And then with Brocklehurst, I mean, the fact that he tries to dress it up and act like it's because it's godly just makes me want to vomit. You know, it's just horrible.
And his hypocrisy with how his wife and daughter are dressed in for the
with the bangs. y'all know I always like weirdly connect to the hair parts of the book. Slamming things around in my house, listening, anger cleaning, just rage fueled when his wife walks in there with all those fluffy bangs that weren't even real. Them to her head. That's a definition of vanity. and then to ridicule not just another adult about it upon these principles, but a child. And to be so stupid to not know that her hair grew that way.
Yeah, I was going to say the curly hair that grows naturally that way, then to act like that's somehow a sin is just...
It's just... Oh, the hypocrisy.
Okay, so I have to throw this in here in the biography because everyone wanted to know. As soon as her identity started to become known, people immediately identified the real school she went to with Brocklehurst School. And it was actually a really big problem because, of course, then everyone assumed it was like this horrible, terrible place. And
it was still open at the time when they were figuring it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was this huge problem and scandal. And so Charlotte, Elizabeth Gaskell does a deep investigative journalism into what actually happened at this school. And it's very interesting. From everything she can gather, there was some truth to some of the things that happened. But really, like when Jane first went there, it really was a matter of like the cook was just a terrible cook.
Okay.
And they, like Gaskell was like, I don't know why the teachers didn't feel like they could report to the owner that this food was like spoiled. It was spoiled. Like it was like inedible. But they said from what she could tell, it was like just about the way that like division of labor and authority was. Like they didn't feel like it was their job to criticize the housekeeping, and the person who was running it honestly didn't know. And so until they had some guests in that it literally made sick, like the guests came, like they have like a guest lecturer, and they tried to eat the food and like threw up. And then they were like, oh, maybe there's something wrong with the food.
We should check out our health rating.
And there were things like they would have the girls in all weathers,
marching
in their
around.
Skimpy clothes, go to church. Like they did make them sit through 3 hours of church and then eat a little bread and then shiver in the church and then wait until the evening service and shiver. There were things like that that were done, but they...
That wasn't about the school as much as the time and poverty.
Yeah. Right? And yes. And so there was definitely... Was it good? No. But was it as extreme as it's portrayed in the book? No. And was the guy who ran it really like Brocklehurst? Not really. Like, he actually seemed to be a pretty good man who, once he discovered what was happening, there was a huge turnaround. There was better food. There was better health. So Jane actually stated that she kind of regretted, like, the harm that her novel did to that man's reputation, because she was like, I was telling a story.
And we get our ideas for stories from life, but they, at some point, they divide. Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, her sisters died there. So there was a typhus outbreak at the time when the food still wasn't good. So were those people responsible probably for the death of two of her sisters? Yeah. So was she mad about it? Yeah. And did it come out in her writing? Yeah. But was it that extreme in real life? No.
Another thing I don't like about Brocklehurst.
Yeah, let's make a list.
We'll have a whole episode on Brocklehurst. No. Another thing, two things I don't like about him are, one, how controlling he is to the minute detail. How much thread they've purchased, what kind of needles. Just so in the day-to-day running of things. And I think people like that, and who, like we've already mentioned a couple other instances where he has imposed shame on people completely, completely unreasonably, tend to struggle with shame themselves, their own shame, and project that onto other people. And I think the controlling nature of that plays into it. And so the second thing is his view of the child. He makes everything a character issue. There is no room for childishness. That we train out of them for mistakes. There's no room for grace. There is only life sentence of this character issue. And it also plays in one's view of the child affects your view of education. And I think about my fangirl relationship with Charlotte Mason, who was a British educator of half a century after this. And her view of the child is very different. And I love how Bronte spends time on education in this book, and to watch, once Brocklehurst's specter is lifted, how much she thrives.
Yeah.
Just from learning. She loves it. She lights up and she identifies herself as being one who can learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right to nail it on him as a shame issue, which is interesting. You know, we had a little Brene Brownish episode a while back. If only he could have sat down and just read Atlas of the Heart. But truly, because all of his pennying them to death wasn't really about, like, we have to have enough money to make this last, because those are hard decisions that have to be made in all kinds of situations. Is, you know, it would be great to get everybody a new coat, but we literally don't have any money to do that. That's different than saying they were born into a place and we must make sure that they know that they have to stay there because of humility. And that's the only way to be a Christian, to understand your place in life and to accept it with all humility. I mean, that's ridiculous. So he was doing all of that awful stuff, not even for a reason that you could maybe come around to understanding, but for a deeply awful reason of, it is my job to make you feel less and to remind you that you're less than other people born on this planet. Like, it's unreal.
And this book, every time I read this again, there's more layers. Like, this book has more layers than the 7-layer Mexican dip. But one of them is... In terms of education, Brocklehurst and Ms. Temple, their view of the child, the way they approach education, thinking about in Ms. Temple's room, the warm fire, they have treats that they're eating, and they have conversations about these great books. Hey, that sounds familiar. Versus Rochester's cold, removed, rigid, as in the Latin meaning of death.
Rigor mortis.
Rigor mortis, a dead body. That does not produce life like education should. So they're a great dichotomy. And someone asked about the names. This is something we can talk about throughout the whole conversation as well, are the names. Brocklehurst sounds very prickly and not friendly, not approachable to me. And Mrs. Temple, it's like
sounds
the
like
church.
Miss Honey from Matilda. Oh,
that's right.
I went a different direction, but I thought that immediately. It sounded so sweet. Okay, I went a totally different direction from you. But no, I thought, well, you love her before you even quite know her, just in yes. how she named her characters. Okay, finish your better sentence about the church.
No, well, I just, you know, like the temple, like yes. where the Lord dwells, and her breathing life into Helen and Jane and experiencing love. Mm-hmm. And I think she's also a dichotomy with St. John in terms of the role of the church.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
St. John is very passionless, and Miss Temple is not. And she later gets married for love versus what St. John ends up doing. Like, I feel too passionate for her. I can't marry her.
So we've done who we love to hate. Who did you love to love in this?
Okay. I think we should say other than Jane.
Yeah. No, other than Jane.
It's like if you're going to be stranded on a deserted island, you've got to like, okay, not the Bible. Won't if you're going to eat, have a meal with three people dead or alive. Okay. Let's not Jesus. Cause that has to be, you know,
so
okay.
not Jane, obviously, but who did you love to love? And I don't think that's the same as favorite character, but like, I loved the parts with her or him or whatever.
I love Helen.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta love Helen Burns.
I did too.
You know, and it's very interesting. Because Helen does set Jane an example of suffering because it's the right thing to do. Even though when I read Helen and some of the things about her Christian stoicism, I don't necessarily agree with. Like, I don't necessarily think it's our duty to just accept abuse because this is the situation we're in right now. But it was an extremely formative perspective for Jane. And I think when we watch her walk away from Mr. Rochester, I think we can see the shades of Helen Burns. Like we can see.
Yes, well said.
We can see the influence of a person who, even though it's hurting her, she's going to do what she believes is right.
Yeah.
And
true moral.
Without Helen, so because of Miss Temple was hugely important in another way. It's like what you were saying in showing her.
You can learn.
And both the love, the compassionate love of truly good people and of God. So I think Miss Temple is Jane's first glance at, you know, we talk about reflecting God's love. Miss Temple is the first person who truly reflects God's love onto her from any kind of place of authority. You know, Helen shows her God's love in a way as well, but she's her peer. And I think even Bronte is setting Helen up, that we don't necessarily agree with everything she says,
but you respect her,
but you respect it. But Miss Temple really is the guiding light. I mean, it's where God dwells. I mean, what other character in the book is really reflecting the true character and truth and beauty of God? There isn't one. She didn't have one as a child. And she gets to the school, the Brocklehurst, terrible. Like, Miss Temple is her grounding, guiding light. And then she goes off into the world. And the very first place she goes is the Rochester home. And then she winds up having to make this really, really hard, heartbreaking, gut-wrenching decision. And Miss Temple is the one who has laid the foundation for her to be able to do that. So
another thing that stuck out to me about Helen Burns that I felt like was a kindness. Helen didn't come right out and say, I'm sick, here's all my stuff. I mean, and that's an example of what she believes about suffering too. But I also thought of it a little bit in a protecting, that she kind of protected Jane from a lot of life's hard, instead of immediately saying, well, there's these things that we have to deal with, and that's something I believe a lot. You know, it wasn't time for that lesson just yet. At first, there was like, you have no one and you can sit by me. We don't have to learn any lessons yet. You know, she protected her for a little bit because she was younger and had no one. And maybe she knew what it was to feel some of that. And so it was a while before Jane realizes like, oh, she's sick.
Yeah.
I thought that was just really beautiful to have someone in the world when you essentially have no one, but to have someone that protected you on some level.
I love their friendship because Jane teaches her that she is lovable. Jane pursues her company, wants to be like her. And Helen is a good friend to her. She rebukes her at one point. And in addition to that, I made a list of 5 things that I learned from Helen while reading and that I think she teaches Jane. One is, do not be surprised at this is how the world is and this is how people are. 2, do not be surprised to experience those things or the hardships of life, because Helen had a peace in spite of that. 3, when you do experience them, it is a way to be like Christ that you cannot be otherwise. There's a unique way to be like Christ that can only come through suffering. Okay, 4, we need others to give us courage and dignity. Now we can find that separately, but we need it from other people too. Jane didn't need courage to retaliate, to say just the right thing at the right time, like when Brocklehurst had her on the chair, to lash out at him. That's not courage. That's anger and bitterness. But I think Helen showed her the courage to have dignity in those situations. And then the last thing is, her agency was mental and spiritual. And that was separate from her situational or physical agency. And I think we see that in Jane later on too. We see all of these things in Jane later on.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well said. One of my favorite moments in the book this time was when Miss Temple says to Jane, essentially, we are not going to just take Brocklehurst and your aunt's word for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually writes a letter or two to find out if Jane's story is true. And then when she gets some confirmation, she says, now we have this confirmation. And from now on, we are going to judge you on what we see in you, not on this report of your character. And when you were talking about dignity, Amanda, like, that is such an important way that we can give each other dignity, is I am not just going to believe what I've heard or maybe even what has happened in your past. I can offer you the gift of a clean slate.
Mm-hmm. And now you that show what, me who you are.
Yes, I'm going to let you show me who you are. That is a huge gift we can give each other.
And cut. Okay, friends, we are going to pause here. So head on over to the Facebook group and talk to us about who you love to love, who you love to hate. What did you see in Helen Burns? Who were your favorite characters in the book? And what do you think Bronte is saying about developing into a whole person? We cannot wait to hear what you think. There is so much fodder for great conversation in this novel. And don't forget to tune in next week. We are going to release next Tuesday, part 2 of this conversation, where we do a deep dive into Mr. Rochester versus St. John and what Bronte is saying about marriage and being a woman and life and who these two men really are. Cannot wait.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, subscribe to Book Fair Podcast.
Join our private Facebook group. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram or email us at chat@bookfairpodcast.com.
And you can help us continue to grow. Share an episode with a friend, mention us on social media, and leave a review in your podcast app. We'll see you next Tuesday.